everyone, and welcome to episode 99 of the GVG Cast, where we hang out, chat with all of you, and see what's been happening over the past week. I'm your host, Derek Bittner, and this time I am joined by the wonderful Brandon Miracle and the effervescent Daniel Alba. We're going to use the $9 words here for this episode. Why not? And you might notice that we are missing an Ash. And that is because both him and Steve are in England right now. We're headed toward the UK, I guess is the better way to put it. Because it's not something we've talked about, but we've cleared it so we can announce it. This weekend, John is getting married. You might be aware of Roxy, his wonderful partner, soon to be a wife. So the marriage is finally happening. He's walking down the aisle. It's be official. He'll have a wedding ring on now. So, those two are actually able to make it out to, the UK so they can go to the wedding. Us three, we're not.
John did tell me he's going to get a cardboard cut out of me so I can be there.
Hey, what? You know what? That works.
About me.
I don't remember hearing about a cardboard cutout. So that makes you even special. Just put me on one of those little standees. You know, those little, I don't know, cardboard, whatever.
I'm gonna raid his wedding live. I'll be there streaming it.
To clarify, I wished him a happy wedding, said I wish I could be there, and he's like, don't worry, we'll get a cardboard cutout. So I'm sure there will be cardboard cutouts of you two as well.
All of us. Hell yeah.
Oh boy, but yeah. I mean, other than that, we also have some birthday shout outs. First of all, shout out to Ash, who's, you know, getting ready for a plane and still reached out and got all this birthday stuff ready because Brandon's taking care of his kid. I'm getting kind of bed. Daniel's preparing for EmblemCon. We're all quite busy and Ash is getting ready to get on a plane and let's get these birthday shout outs. So shout out to Ash, first of all, and then shout out to Ozzy, whose birthday was 2 days ago on April 3rd, and Fiog, I believe that's how it's pronounced, whose birthday is tomorrow at tomorrow the 6th. So happy birthday to both of you.
Happy birthday.
Very happy birthday.
Ash should probably be in a coma, and he'll still find a way to get all of the stuff prepared for us in advance. That's the kind of man he is.
Yeah, it is. It's ridiculous. But yeah, I mean, very much appreciated. So we got all of us here holding down the fort. And I guess just how have you guys been today? Or this week, I suppose, is the better way to put it.
Today's not in particular. Today I had a big, long sleep. I'm enjoying my time here by myself. My family went to see other family in the like Texas region area near Mexico, and for Easter. So they take all three girls. The girls want to see all the family, and everyone wants to see the girls. So I've had the place to myself. It's been very nice. I took my PS5 downstairs and hooked it to our big sound system and just played Final Fantasy VII Rebirth for that. it's been an experience, and I'm sad that they're gonna come and claim it back tonight.
Stay another week. It's all good.
Yeah, why not? That's fine. But that happened. It's been fine otherwise. Just been really busy preparing for EmblemCon, which is gonna be next week. Which I just realized. If we do have GBG cast next week, I won't be here for episode 100. So I don't know.
Oh,
we might have to figure something out, or I don't know. We'll figure something out for what we're gonna do with 100. But that's coming up real soon. I'm really excited. I got like panels lined up. I'm gonna be chatting with some of the voice actors that were in Fire Emblem. Other fun games that other Twitch stream panels are gonna have. If you want to check that out? It's the EmblemCon on Twitch. That's gonna be. It's gonna be a fun time. It's getting bigger and bigger. Our fifth year. I can't believe we're doing this for 5 years now. It's crazy.
That's wild. So the big goal here is to hook up with Nintendo and be like, use EmblemCon to announce Fire Emblem news.
I would so love cool. that. Oh my god, that'd be incredible.
That would be quite awesome. What about you, Brandon? What have you been up to for the past week? Anything in particular?
Well, it's the beginning of spring season, so Michaela's very busy at work with all the theater productions that are going on, because her theater is the only theater in that entire school district. So you can imagine what that's like. Yeah, classes, meetings, plays, musicals.
Oh boy.
So we're in the middle of her being gone a whole lot. So it's a lot of me and baby time right now. And you know what? I'm really enjoying that. Ella is really starting to bud in her personality. Her goofy side is starting to come out. So I'm really, it's starting to be a lot of fun hanging out with her. It's crazy, man, seeing how much she's just evolving in such a short time. She's 7 months old now, and she has gotten to the point where she's grabbing the bottle by herself and feeding herself a little bit at a time. Like, she can't do it for too long, but she started doing that like a couple days ago, and I was like, oh, when did this happen?
Yeah. They just learn. It's crazy.
I'm still getting little moments like that because Kai's been a little slow to talk in full sentences. He still has a lot of babble in him, and he's finally starting to get a bit more. He's actually going to be going to speech therapy here to just to coax it out a little bit more, so we help his communication skills and whatnot. But I've even without that, I've noticed it's slowly improving, and it was so funny tonight where he was eating and he burped. And all of a sudden he says, excuse me. It's just like, oh. I never taught him that. He just did it on his own. It's like, oh, that's awesome. Good job, kid.
Yeah, these kids absorb everything. Like, they observe really what they hear from everyone else. And they're a sponge. It's crazy. I've observed that three times over with my sisters at this point, and it never fails to surprise me.
I'm getting to the point now, like, where I'm like, maybe I should watch what I'm playing and or watching around her.
Yep.
Because today I decided, you know, it's going to be a long day. I need to put on a movie or something. And I put on Joker, you know, great family movie.
Oh, boy.
I had her turned away from the screen for most of it. Don't worry. Uh-huh. However, in the beginning of the movie, there's a lot of scenes of Joaquin Phoenix just laughing because that's a condition his character has. And I noticed that whenever he laughed, she would. I've been thinking about that all day. I don't know what to make of this information.
Some kind of conditioning that I wasn't prepared to hear.
Yeah. I'm reminded of when I was watching movies and whatnot, like I'd be up late with Kai because he's not going to bed, so I'm just put on a movie or whatever and just watch that. And obviously some are not that he should actually watch, and he never emulated like Ella did right there. But I was also just got really conscious about him, like, because he'd look at the screen and like, no, he just like look back towards the screen and like, I don't think I should watch this stuff anymore. And now, nowadays, he has the TV. He decides what he wants to watch, which it's been like weird YouTube stuff where it's like kids focused stuff. But it's like, fortunately, got him ported towards like compilations of bubble guppies to watch that sort of thing. And
get some Blue's Clues going.
Yeah, a little bit of Blue's Clues. And on Disney Plus, we actually got him to watch Inside Out, and now he has likes to watch Trolls. I'm like, you know what? I'll take it. Better than just random YouTube crap. Like,
there are worse things.
Yeah, there is this weird thing that was discovered because we were like, oh, he's watching all these educational stuff. He's learning letters, learning numbers, and then there was this letter thing that came up that was, I can't remember. Letter bits or something like that. Basically, letters emulated in various weird personifications where they're sort of punkish. And I noticed one where it's like a tight tube top with nipple showing, like kind of pointing. I'm like, what the hell is this? I don't know. I forget what it's called, but I'm like, I cleared out the YouTube function because it kept coming up. I'm like, like, it's ostensibly teaching letters, but it's also like in the weirdest way, in with the weirdest text to it, where it's like A, B, C, you know, just that. And he was emulating that. And I'm like, okay, no, we got to get away from this. this got to go. So I cleared out the search function and highly kept an eye on what the heck was coming up. Amy's in the chat. If you remember what that hex called, I'd love to hear it, because I forget at this point. Thank God.
If there's anything I've learned from like just reading about kids YouTube in the last few years, it's that kids YouTube is weird. Just weird.
It's a wild west out there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I've done.
I'm sticking to public television, maybe.
Well, that's the funny thing. We were getting, like, I don't know how it came up, because we were getting, like, British learning things where these, like, alpha, the number jacks was coming up, and this other sort of alphabet thing. And then all of a sudden that sort of came up, and he's like, that. I'm like, okay, well, look at this. And it just was like, no. Like, and he'll get upset, but I'm like, yeah. That's it, Will Gaming in live audience. Alphabet lore. I have no idea what it is, but no, I hate that. It
doesn't even sound like it's for children, just by the name.
I hate that with a passion. I never thought I'd have to, like, alphabets. Like, nope, you can't look at the alphabet, son. It's too much for you.
My gosh.
That alphabet is too risque.
Oh, yeah. My sisters are a bit older, so we kind of, like, they kind of hop around different shows that they watch. My dad doesn't really have any kind of, like, sense as far as what to show them, so they kind of watch, you know, things on Netflix that it's kind of the same-ish stuff over and over. Things that I would be like, yeah, you can watch something a little, you know, more, what's the word? A little more fulfilling than this. So that sometimes we just kind of gather together. I show them shows to watch. We watched She-Ra not too long ago. It's actually a really cool show on Netflix. We recently saw Pokemon Concierge as well. Yeah. They love that. And so we jumped into Pokemon Horizons not too long after that. And we're not all the way through, but it's been really lovely for them to like get introduced to Pokemon this way.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
They get a fresh start with Horizons. New cast, new characters.
Do.
Yeah.
Now they get 25 years of, what is her name, Coco? Loco?
Lico. She's going to be 10 years old for until we're dead.
40 years.
Just what you like to see. But
I want to show them the movie that you showed me, Brandon. God, what was it called? Pokemon? The one that's
Power of Us?
Power of Us, that's the one.
Oh, I need to watch that one. I've heard that's really good.
It's really good, yeah.
That was beautiful animation. That was like my favorite. That was my coziest night. Just checking that out, watching Pokemon movies with Brandon. I miss those. I need to go back over there and introduce myself to Ella at some point, too. I haven't met her yet.
You got to meet her before she's, like, off to college.
I hope he would see her at that before that point. So, would hope so, but yeah, it's a weird rabbit hole you get into sometimes with this, with kids media and what pops up. And honestly, the other weird thing is, I share Disney Plus with my sister, and she has Hulu. So now Hulu stuff is popping up on Disney Plus, which is throwing me off, because all of a sudden, like, here's advertisements for FX stuff, like, American Horror Story and you know, things like that. And I'm like,
not child friendly.
Yeah, like, that's not child friendly. Like, oh, here's Family Guy. No. What? That's not quite right. I mean, it's kind of cool, but it also has these weird moments where like, I'm on Disney. It's like, watch Detective Pikachu. What? Threw me for a loop there. So, you can turn that off, Fangs? Okay. Might have to do that he doesn't go through Disney Plus too often, but it's just one of those weird things.
So. Yeah, you know, Disney Plus doesn't get a ton of use from me right now. I do use a lot of Hulu. Like, Hulu's probably the thing I watch the most. But yeah, I don't dig into Disney Plus that much, I feel like.
I mean, obviously, John and I have both talked about it, but when she gets a little older, Bluey.
Oh, is that on Disney Plus?
Yeah, you can have all of Bluey on Disney Plus. Yeah. So, yeah. I mean, honestly, I think you'd enjoy it too, Brandon. It'll make you...
Michaela watched one episode and told me it made her cry.
Did you know what episode she watched?
I think it was The Baby Race.
Oh, yeah, that'll do it. That makes Amy cry.
Oh boy. Maybe I should check that one out.
I mean,
yeah, I've been thinking about starting it now that she's starting to kind of interact with what, yeah. I really wish Joker wasn't the thing that she started doing that with, but you know, you live and you learn.
The other thing I will mention about Bluey is you will watch that dad and be like, I am a terrible father compared to him. I cannot measure up to him because he just goes all out for his kids.
I don't want to feel bad.
You don't feel bad, but it's sort of like I should get more involved in doing like do this sort of thing. Because
yeah, it sounds like it just makes you reevaluate yourself, and not in a negative way. You're just like, what can I do for my child as a father?
Yeah,
what I've witnessed, because yeah, my sisters watched that as well, and I kind of observed from the sidelines, like, huh, yeah, that's a lot of messages for the kids and for the adults in this show, and that's fantastic.
I'd recommend
it. More media like that. Yeah, it's definitely on the list.
Yep. Well, this is ostensibly a gaming podcast, so what have we all been playing? You may have watched Joker, Brandon, but what have you been playing lately? Have you been able to play anything?
So most of my game time has been in the evening after Michaela gets back from work. And my friend Levi has been playing a lot of Dragon Quest XI. It's his first mainline Dragon Quest game.
Ooh, nice.
Outside of 10. Because I got him to play 10 with me. He's the person I play 10 with. And he enjoyed it so much, he's like, I want to play Dragon Quest XI. And he's loving that. And just him getting back into the game, because he took a break for a couple months, because he was playing on PS Extra and a sub ran out. And he just got a sub back, so now he's playing through more. And I'm like, dang, Dragon Quest is cool. So now I'm hyper-fixated, and I'm like, I want to go back to Dragon Quest X. And he's like, yeah, me too. So now we're playing Dragon Quest X.
That's amazing.
We're finishing up everything we didn't do in version one. We finished the story, but there's a lot of side content.
Of course.
A lot of the kind of quests you do in Final Fantasy 14 that unlock features. Mm-hmm. We have a lot of that stuff we haven't touched. So we're going back, doing a lot of that. And then once we're caught up, we're going to dive into version two and see that through to the end.
How many versions are there? Like, I know there's been a bunch of expansions.
There's 7, and the 7th just came out.
Oh my gosh.
Man, a lot.
There's a lot of connections to Dragon Quest IX. Dragon Quest X version 7's map is the map from Dragon Quest IX. So they have fully dove in, and I want to know what's going on. So I'm playing right now.
Nice. I mean, you know me, I've been slowly playing through Dragon Quest. My next one is 3. So it's going to be a while till I get to 10. But if I do get to 10 and it's still have those services, like I'll hope that you can guide me through. And
I've learned a lot.
Yeah,
I'm not a master, but I can make my way through that game now.
It's kind of me in 14, so yeah.
I mean, hopefully one day we get Dragon Quest X offline. It's getting an update, I think, later this year that adds version 2's story to the game.
Oh, I didn't realize that.
Because version one, yeah, version 1 and version 2 are kind of a complete package. Version 1 has a definitive ending, but the version 2 is kind of a continuation of that story. If you want to get even more technical, versions 1 through 5 are kind of similar to 14's arc, ending with
Endwalker.
Endwalker. Mm-hmm. So you can kind of look at it that way. I think offline's going to end with 2, though. I don't think they're going any further than that. In fact, I'm pretty sure when you beat version 2, they give you a character voucher that you can take online and continue your game.
I mean, that's kind of cool, but also...
Sucks for us.
Yeah. I mean, we haven't even gotten 10 offline yet, so...
Yep.
Yeah. Huh.
Can only hope.
I gotta say, if you hadn't told me before we started, I would not have expected 10 to be Dragon Quest 10 to be what you were playing.
It just happened, man. You and I were talking about 14, got me thinking about MMOs. My friend started playing Dragon Quest 11, and I was like, well... Back to Dragon Quest X.
I know how we was talking specifically about Final Fantasy 14 and how you had played that and were like wanting to get into it, which is also funny because shortly after that discussion, Amy and I finally worked with some friends and did the Monster Hunter stuff in it's back in Stormblood. We finally did it, but learned what it takes to get Rathalos as a mount if you're curious about that. So it turns out you have to beat it in its extreme difficulty. Fortunately, you can do it unsynced, but you got to specifically make sure to cut off its tail so you can get its scale plus. You need 50 scale pluses in order to get the Rathalos mount. You get one each battle.
Those are Monster Hunter 1 drop rates. That's bad.
Yeah. 50 times you got to beat that thing. So if you could get lucky... and get the mount itself as a drop during that fight, but it is extremely rare. We have another friend who was telling us about it, and they had been going through trying to get the mount. On the 48th victory over Rathalos, the mount itself dropped.
Oh, man. That's got to burn.
Yeah. Yeah.
His friend... To put it in perspective, in Monster Hunter... You know, scales are typically the most common drop. But then you'll have a drop that's called a plate or a gem, ruby, or sometimes mantle. That's the rarest drop from a monster. And its drop rate is typically between 1 and 5%.
Oh, no.
So if you want to know how it really is, that's how it goes.
Ooh, no, thank you. Oh, goodness. I don't want to put too much. I know people check out when I talk 14. All I'll say is I did the I finished up Shadowbringers. I'm ready to start Endwalker. I have 3 months to get through Endwalker, so I'm ready for Dawntrail releasing in July.
I think you're gonna do it.
We're basically gonna be doing extra streams so we can manage it, Amy and I, because we want to be content current with friends. It'd be really cool to be able to do that. But yeah, I don't want to. Dwell on that other than to say I'm amazed and impressed with the Final Fantasy 16 crossover that they were able to integrate the dodge and precision strike mechanics from 16 into the fight itself.
That's so cool.
would never expect it. It's simplified, of course, but it's still like there's ones where it actually counts down so you can guarantee to dodge bigger attacks, but you can put yourself in harm's way of his other attacks and then do proper dodge timing so you can get it more often. And that's what does the most damage to that during that fight. It's really cool integration, but yeah. What about you, Daniel? I don't want to derail.
Let's see. Mostly been during this week, I've been playing Final Fantasy, so you know it all comes back to Final Fantasy. But also in Rebirth for the most of the week. But I mean, you've heard me talking about that already. I'm towards the end of exploring the Cosmo Canyon area.
Oh, you're definitely beyond me now. I left off starting Chapter 5.
Oh yeah, that's a bit ways more in there. And thing in those areas that I wander around, I hover between doing some of them to the point where it's like I'll just do the rest of the intel for this spot. Well, why not? I'm already this far in doing the proto-relic. Okay, yeah, I'll do the proto-relic. Proto-relic events, like, those are kind of necessary for some parts because they will tell you some big story bits that you don't really hear about in the main story. So definitely do those, at least if you're playing the game.
Especially Cosmo Canyon.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, I was like, wow, they were just going to... This is optional.
You would have missed some key information.
Yeah. aside from Final Fantasy, because of the video I put out this week, I put my hands on a lot of different Tales games this year just to get footage, and some of them I kind of stuck with to play more again. Tales of Hearts R is one that I played a bit more this week, because I've been kind of chipping away at that every now and then. It's not one that I've fully gone through myself, because I only recently got the physical copy not too long ago. So I've been playing that, and I'm just like, yeah, man, it sucks that this isn't on the shop anymore, or anyone to download for the Vita shop.
Yeah,
this is a continuing problem with not just Tales games, which is other games that are being delisted. And like, I get it was supposed to be delisted at some point, like the whole PS3 Vita shop was going to be taken down, but Namco didn't say anything. They just kind of took it off. They didn't, no warning to people that might want to still have gotten it.
Give a heads up, yeah, you might get some last minute sales. At the very least, that.
Yeah, that would have been ideal instead of just removing them. And I didn't realize that. Yeah, there was even more on the EU storefront that just aren't available at all. Like there's even less Tales games available on there. We at least had like the double pack, Symphonia and the Symphonia and the sequel are both on there. Exilia 2 is the main pain that I feel, because that's a really good Tales game. Even though some people may say otherwise, for certain aspects of it, I definitely know which parts they would complain about in that one. But overall, like, one of my favorite Tales games, aside from like Abyss and Vesperia, that area. So I don't know. It's been rough, but I mean, still great Tales, great game. It's kind of like Dragon Quest in a way where its battle system is very much, for the most part, like it knows what it's all about. Like, it doesn't really change it that much from game to game. It went from 2D to 3D. Slowly through like Symphonia, Abyss, Vesperia, those games, but it's mostly remained the same until kind of Arise kind of switched it up a little bit, and Berseria. But more often or not, it's like your real time, everything happens at once, action RPG, in battle. And man, I wish more people could play this series.
I mean, I hope Star Ocean Second Story sold well, so Namco couldn't look at that as like, maybe we should do something similar with like that with Tales of Phantasia, and or some of our other PS1 Tales games. You know, that'd be kind of fun to get that sort of push out there. There was a time where I would actually pick up new Tales games, because I enjoyed Symphonia, but I never quite got through them. Or never really quite, it got to a point I was just falling behind, but I kept picking them up. So I was like, all right, I got to stop buying them. So I have Xillia 1, but not Xillia 2, because, well, I didn't beat Xillia 1, so why should I buy Xillia 2? And then it just carried over like that. So it's like, dang it.
That's a really good sequel. Like, I know Dawn of the New World isn't really considered like a mothership. It's more so a side game, even though it's really close to like a mothership title, but they really handled, you know, a returning cast with Exilia 2 much better than they did in Dawn of the New World, which I know some people can't even play those anymore, so you just have to take my word for it. Honestly, I would let you borrow my physical copy if I could, if you're nearby. Namco is really just, I don't know what they're doing. I mean, they have popular IPs like Dragon Ball and Sword Art Online, and so it feels like they kind of just put their focus on the main ones, and the more niche ones kind of get left behind, at least here in the West. As I mentioned, that series is super celebrated in Japan. Every year they have Tales of Festival, and it's like it's a big event. It's crazy to see how wildly popular it is there still.
It's odd, because I'm happy for its fans that we somehow got a Bat and Kaidos duology re-release. Like, great for those fans. The series never is. Yeah. I tried the series, didn't click with me, so I didn't bother picking up the re-release. Also, not a lot of talk about the re-release, honestly, whenever it did land. But why choose that for Monolith Soft and not Xenosaga?
Exactly what I brought up at the end of my video. In that little bit. I'm like, there's this series too. It's right in the box. Oh my gosh.
I feel like there's a whole new set of fans kind of interested in that game at this point, and probably would be really interested in seeing the evolution. But I don't know. We don't get to make those decisions. It's sad.
Well, thanks all to those of you who watched the video. I had a fun time talking about the really weird ones like GBA Fantasia and Tales of Legendia. I didn't think I'd ever like talk about those in any meaningful capacity in a video, so that was fun.
I mean, I can guarantee you it's going to be a while. I want to do it eventually, but I am halfway through a script of the Tales of retrospective, but I started that literally like 2 or 3 months before starting the Zelda one, and the Zelda one overwhelmed me with how big it was. And I'm like, I'm just going to take a break from this sort of stuff, cause it's a lot.
Don't blame you.
But I eventually do want to get back to Tales of, especially cause I didn't realize until your video that it's 30th anniversary is coming up.
Yeah. Next year's going to be the 30th anniversary of Fantasia. It's crazy.
Wow.
I feel like we got to do have that retrospective for the 30th anniversary next year. I feel like that's
absolutely,
we kind of need to do that.
I will assist in any way.
Yeah.
But yeah. I'll be more than happy to help make that happen. Yeah.
And I took note. There's a lot of people that got upset at me. It's like, you didn't talk about the mobile games from Shin Megami Tensei. How is this the complete? Well, guess what? I delved into the mobile games of Tales and that's weird. There's some, you want flip phone Tales of games? There you go.
We have options. We have a lot going on. And yeah, even like a few years ago, there was like 4 concurrent mobile Tales of games on devices, especially in Japan. I'm just like, how do you guys keep up with all this? There was a lot. Cristoria, Tales of Link, Tales of the Ray, Tales of Luminaria, Tales of something else I probably forgot the name of. There's a lot. They put a lot of eggs in that basket.
I haven't even reached the gacha stuff. I'm talking about the old school stuff.
There's a whole era before those.
Let me see if I can find it. Just to get a list of games and see of... Yeah, I have 50 plus games, according to this. And for perspective, my script is at 21 pages, and I stopped right before getting to Tales of Vesperia. Man, that's 2008. That's like, so
there's so many more after that.
Yeah. There's a lot. Like, what do we got? We got Tales of Fandom. We've got Tales of Tactics. We've got Tales of Commons. We've got the Tales of the mobile minigames, which, you know, Tales of Reversi, Tales of Klondike, Tales of Kramel. What the hell is a Kramel? I had to answer that. Tales is weird.
They've done a lot. It's weird to think that they've done so much of this like extra stuff, mobile, and you know Japan only releases in an era like now. It's going to be a 30th anniversary and we don't see pretty much anything except for like the DLC that got released or a port of another game that was remastered. It's slowed down so much out over here, and yeah, it'd be interesting to see exactly how many titles in the Mothership series there are versus like mobile titles themselves. It's shockingly closer than you want it to be.
Yeah, no, it's certainly up there, for sure. Real quick for the games I'm playing. One thing I did want to mention that I just get a kick out of. One, I'm nearly done with Live Alive. I'm going through the Middle Ages right now. Almost done with that. Just got through its big twist. Got past its big twist. I'm like, where's this going? And I kind of wonder if I'm kind of getting an idea for how it might all come together at the end now, but I'm not 100% sure. Otherwise, there was a name mentioned when I got to chapter 5 of the Final Fantasy VII Rebirth. And I'm like, I've never heard that name before. What is that name? And I looked it up, and it's a character from that book they put out that talked about Tifa and Aerith's pasts. I forget what it's called. Really? Offhand. Yeah, there's they mentioned this character where it's like, Tifa asked Aerith, "Are you worried about such and such?" I forget forget their name. Like, I don't recognize that name. And I looked up the name, and it comes from that book, and it's talking about that's it, Traces of Two Pasts. Thank you, Mercury. And it's actually mentioning this character that had an unhealthy obsession with Aerith's mom.
I didn't realize that was canon material.
Apparently it is, according to the Rebirth.
I guess I have to read that.
Well, yeah, it made me certainly interested. It seemed like it was kind of interesting, although the guy definitely seemed like a bit of a creep. So, yeah. Oh, goodness. But, yeah, obviously, there's honestly not been a lot of news. That's why we didn't really focus on it, other than just bits and pieces here and there. If any bits of news that you guys remember from this week that you want to talk about? But otherwise, we can just move on to our patron topics.
Not really, no.
Oh, it's been kind of a dry week. It's been a bit slow lately, honestly.
Yeah, it definitely has been. It's been pretty slow, but that's all fine. Yeah, then let's go ahead and get to our patron topics. As always, we can offer up, as long as you're a patron at the live audience tier and above, you can offer up questions for us to answer each week. And Daniel, who did you choose this time? What question?
Let's see. What did I choose? This comes from Somnia asking, I recently got done watching another podcast and they discussed the N64 versus the SNES, and which they feel had the better lineup over its lifetime of games, not just Nintendo games, all games. I was curious of your takes. Ultimately, the N64 won in this other podcast by one game. They did a ranking system and a fan provided them. And they're saying, personally for them, it's the SNES as it holds so many memories for them. It really began their love of JRPGs. But the N64 also holds a lot of memories for me with friends and party games. Very hard decision. Yeah, I feel like I retroactively experienced the SNES myself because I did own one. My grandpa owned one. But I couldn't really, oh, it's a weird thing to say. He owned one and I had like only four games on it. He had the eclectic mix of Super Mario World, Turtles in Time, DMNT, Street Fighter 2, and some Madden game. One random, I don't even know what, 97.
There's always a Madden.
Somewhere. And so I didn't really experience SNES until like the Wii Virtual Console, when I was able to really dip back and get some of those, or I experienced them through like GBA ports, Nintendo DS ports, like Chrono Trigger. But I really kind of like cobbled together my memories of that beyond there. But the N64 for me is something that I really like. That was my first console, and so that's something that I have a lot of memories with. I want to say that I think the N64 is the better one for some of the experiences that I've had on that itself. Growing up as an only child with an N64 is kind of a curse because it's meant to be multiplayer. So you kind of have to have friends over to really experience the actual, you know, the purpose of that console was playing four players in games like Smash Brothers, Mario Party, GoldenEye, those kind of games. And so, yeah, when I had friends over or when I went over to see friends, I really like cherished those moments because I'm just like, oh my God, I can finally stop playing against the CPU against this game. It's amazing. This is incredible. But not just that, also like the single player experiences too. I experienced Zelda through my younger cousin. She would come over and she had her cartridge, her brother's cartridge, and she would play that and show me what it was like. I was like, oh, that's crazy. That's awesome. I want to try that. And so, that's how I picked up Majora's Mask. Is one of technically my first Zelda game, but although I experienced all of Ocarina of Time before that, so I went back and bought that afterwards. Games that I never thought I would pick up. I think a family friend of ours picked up like F-Zero X for my birthday. I would probably not pick up that game given the box art because I was like, oh, Mario and Kirby and all this and Zelda and all that sort of stuff. But that's how I got into that series. I'm glad I did because that game's really awesome. Games like Banjo was incredible on there as well. And those experiences, I think those core experiences are more like precious to me, I think. Playing Mario 64 for the first time, that kind of like experiencing the third dimension and everything. So personally, I think the SNES obviously has its classics. Of course it does. It has so many beloved classics that make an impact on games being made today, especially by like indie developers and whatnot. But for me, it's the N64. I think that's the one I feel has a better lineup of lifetime games, only because there's some games that really like help push the genres of which they created in that space. So I think that's my answer.
Mm-hmm. What about you, Brandon? I'm curious where you're gonna fall on this one.
This is kind of tough because the Super Nintendo was my first video game console. Followed shortly by the N64, probably just a couple of years. But the Super Nintendo is what made me fall in love with like Super Mario, The Legend of Zelda. It's interesting too, because like my Super Nintendo was a hand-me-down from my older brother. So the game collection I had were just the games that he got. And it's kind of similar with the N64, where I didn't really have any say over what games I received. Like, it's just whatever my parents looked at and said, okay. And then they'd pick it up and bring it home.
Yeah.
In some ways, it's kind of interesting to me that I ended up playing a lot of these big, important games on the Super Nintendo, especially because I had no say in what I played. I just had what I had. I had Super Mario World. I had A Link to the Past, Super Mario Kart, even some hidden gems like Tiny Toon's Adventures, Buster Busts Loose. That's a great game. Yoshi's Island. I remember the day my dad brought Yoshi's Island home. He got it from, we had a used game shop that he'd always go to. And I don't know if the guy just cut him good deals, but he'd go there all the time. And he just came home with Yoshi's Island one day, and I saw him playing it, and I was like, whoa, I love Yoshi from that other video game I played. And that built a very strong attachment to Yoshi, especially. So this isn't going to be rooted in any like logic. It's going to be rooted in personal bias. But I'm going to say Super Nintendo because without it, I don't think I would play video games at
That's
all.
fair. Yeah, your era of Super Nintendo is my era of NES and Genesis, because a certain blue hedgehog coaxed me over to the Genesis and away from the Super Nintendo because the Super Nintendo wasn't out yet. And yeah, that's I. So because of that, I missed owning at least the SNES and N64 era. I played a few of the games, but that's what makes it tough, because I can look back now and look at the SNES and just its amazing lineup of single player experiences. There are so many fantastic Super Nintendo games, whether you want RPGs, platformers, you got some search action, you've got hidden classics that you might not be aware of, there's just so much. There's so many good SNES games to play. It's hard to even list them all. But then you have the Nintendo 64, and the way I was able to play the Nintendo 64 is that a friend had it, and he had four controllers. So we often did multiplayer gaming. So we had Smash Brothers, we had Mario Party, we had Mario Kart. Just constant playing of those awesome multiplayer games that you never had before. It was the multiplayer machine, and there was no point of buying a multi-tap for the PS1. You got two player games best at best, and it's just like, even then I didn't play a whole lot because all the really fun party games were on the N64. So that's what makes it tough, because you're looking at either some amazing party games and some evolutions of genres with Nintendo on the N64, with Ocarina and Mario 64. So it's like, how do you choose between those two? You think it'd be easy because the SNES's lineup is just huge, but it's a lot tougher than you'd think when you really think about the experiences you get from those games and what kind of gamer you are. That said, I think I have to tip my hat a little closer to the SNES era, just because I've always been more of a single player gamer than a multiplayer gamer. So
I'm kind of the other way around. If I had a similar experience to Daniel where I had a bunch of people to play 64 with, I'd probably say 64 instead. See, the multiplayer console for me ended up being the GameCube. That's when I had friends coming over all the time and we were all into the same stuff. So GameCube was always on. So yeah, I guess it really depends on that single player versus multiplayer metric.
It is kind of this the aspect of it. Before we move on to our next patron topic, one of the ones that was asked, and we're not going to bring it up here or talk about, didn't even talk about it otherwise. So the Xenoblade Chronicles 3 art book came out in Japan. There is a lot of interesting stuff that came out of the interviews. That's all spoiler stuff. That is not, you do not want to talk about that in any kind of public setting. So no, it's interesting, but we cannot talk about it at all. But yeah, Brandon, what patron topic did you choose?
So mine comes from A Drink to the Past. What's the worst game you've ever loved? I think Bomberman Zero is a fantastic game that's hidden beneath two incredibly bad decisions. No save feature or even checkpoints in the main campaign make it near impossible to actually beat. And the fact that multiplayer was locked to a single person per console made it far too expensive to be viable as a party game, which is what Bomberman does best. But beneath all that is one of the most fun core Bomberman gameplay styles Hudson has ever made. And I'll stand by that no matter who calls me insane.
Oh, I never touched it.
I have two that I think come to mind for this one. The first, Daniel's probably familiar with because I never shut up about it, and that's Glover. I love Glover.
Oh, man.
I gotta find
Glover on the 64 is, I mean, for all intents and purposes, you know, it's not a great game. It's just not. But at the core of it is a really interesting gameplay mechanic that I think is worth exploring more than the game did. Just the way you interact with the ball and the various forms it can have. Glover has a lot of moves available to him that are actually fairly useful, like tapping the A button quickly to toss the ball straight in the air. I use that move all the time. There's just a lot going on from a gameplay experience that I think, if refined, could actually make for a maybe even legendary platformer. Hmm. It just didn't quite get there. But I can see it. I know it had the potential. It just never got to meet that.
It definitely seemed like they were going to explore that with Glover 2, as I learned most from John's video. That could have been something that they expounded upon and just have something be a lot more, just really focus in on the fact that you can pick up not just the balls, the main object, but just anything that's in the environment, and that could have had a lot of unique implications, because you're a hand, you're playing as a cursor, like that's still an interesting mm-hmm. idea that I think you can do something with. So
the other quick game I want to mention is a notoriously bad Dragon Ball Z game, and that is Dragon Ball Z Sagas. I had it on the GameCube. It is a garbage pale mess of a video game. It's broken, it barely works, it sounds like garbage. I loved it. So it's a beat 'em up. It was two player. All my friends loved Dragon Ball Z, so it was just a game where you got around the couch, around TV, and you just had fun. I knew a lot of glitches that I knew how to trigger specifically, and it could break the game in a myriad of ways. Like, there's an uppercut move that launches your opponent up in the air. If you do that and then use the teleport feature, you can teleport up to them while they're up there and then grab them for the spinning throw. And if you do that and hold the button, you start going up forever. And I thought that was the coolest thing in the world. So it's a game I love because it's broken.
There's a few like that.
Yeah.
What about you, Daniel? Do you have some off the top of your head, or should I go first while you think?
There's one I can think of that comes to mind. It's not Glover. That glove never gets any love, but I think it's underrepresented. Gosh, I spent a year, not a year, I spent a good chunk of time, one of the last years, playing through the Danganronpa series. And so I played through pretty much everything that was available to me on the PS3, or the PS4, rather. That include Ultra Despair Girls, which was also out there. Now, that game, it's like set between the first and second games. It has some spoilers for both, but it's best you play them. Maybe you play those before you play Ultra Despair Girls. If you played Danganronpa before, you know the format of those games. This does not follow that format whatsoever. There is no court cases. There's no, you know, you have to find out who killed who. It's not anything like that. It's the horniest Resident Evil game you've ever played. Instead, that's probably the best way I can describe it. It has a maniacal story with this game, like even for Danganronpa standards. There's
some of the most messed up backstories you'll ever encounter.
Oh God, the backstories in this game are pretty much the reason why, if anything, this game shows why the Ultimate Despair is like as bad as it is, because your villains are a bunch of children, and oh Lord.
Oh, yeah. Think about the worst backstories children can have. They're there.
it's probably there, and it's not. God, this game is just messed up in all these sorts of ways. Like, you shoot, your enemies are like different versions of Monokuma. You're like shooting bullets. You have like a megaphone. And you're like shooting bullets. It's just ridiculous talking about it. And one of the characters you can play as is also Genocide Jack for the first game. If you know who that is, you know who that is. And you can. It's kind of like an alternate play method when you're playing.
Who gets the best like character development ever? Like, for that character, like, you would never expect it.
Yeah, I didn't expect any of that. Like, that this freaking insane story. You're like on an island that's overrun by all these Monokumas. They're controlled by these evil children. It's really dark. It's kind of cringe. It's pretty tasteless, actually. It's over the top.
Oh yeah,
and it's kind of awesome at times. Sometimes, honestly, it's like you know the game's not a good game while you're playing it, but I couldn't help it anyways, because I was like focused on trying to learn as much of the story as I could for as out there as it possibly can be.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I mean, it was pretty jank at times too, just because of it. It felt like they never knew how to make a game of this style, and so they kind of just, it was for the PS Vita as well, so I mean, playing a remastered version on PS4, I didn't know what to expect. But yeah, that's probably one of the weirdest titles I've ever played, the worst games I've played, but I still play, there's parts that I still love about it and I appreciate about it.
I kind of came away from that. I was like, this doesn't feel as bad as people say, but maybe I'm the crazy one at that point.
Yeah, I think I had the same reaction. Like, obviously it plays nothing like the rest of the series as like a side game, but there's some things I would stick around for that I clearly did, because I beat the whole thing. It was a ride, man.
Oh, it definitely was. Yeah, I don't know. I guess put me in there as well. I just kind of enjoyed it. Call me weird. As for mine, gosh, I still have the one, but I'm trying to think of the other one that I thought of that I've lost now, because you got me thinking about Ultra Despair Girls. I will say one of the original ones. I have not gone back to it, so I think that's also a key point here. So Sonic and the Secret Rings was one of the Sonic games that got me back into Sonic. And I distinctly remember...
Why?
It was in college, and the people, like, they also gave me, like, I also borrowed Sonic Adventure 2 and Shadow the Hedgehog. So I have an odd soft spot for Secret Rings and Shadow the Hedgehog. I recognize them as not good, but I did everything in Shadow to get the true story ending, so there's that. And I like the exhilaration you'd kind of get from certain levels in Secret Rings, and... You know, it was early days of Wii, so it was kind of fun to do all the Wii controls and stuff like that. So
it was novel back then.
Yeah, it was novel. It felt good to upgrade Sonic, so you're going faster and getting through these levels quicker and doing all these other things. It's just, I don't know what it was. It just kind of clicked with me, and I recognize it as not good, but I had fun. And, you know, it's by the end, I was having a good time. I'm trying to remember the other one I thought of that I know is not good, but I still enjoy anyway, and I've completely blanked on it, and I apologize for that. Oh, no, there, I remember now. Castlevania 64. It is not good, but it also starts out with one of its worst levels. The first level is not great, but if you can get past that, it really does feel like a Castlevania in 3D, almost more so than any other 3D Castlevania. in very odd wow. ways. You just have to kind of get into its mindset. And trust me, it has problems. It's not great, but there's something about it that just drew me in and be like, no, it's still low on the list compared to other Castlevania games, but it is still fun in its own way. You just have to know to definitely hold that button while you're hanging onto an edge, because you let go of the button, you're going to fall off that edge if you're hanging from it. And learn to walk, not run with a bomb. So it's certainly interesting, but I don't know. I found myself just kind of liking it, even though it's not my favorite Castlevania game by a long shot, but I have an odd appreciation for it.
Games that have friction between the game and the player are sometimes overlooked and misconstrued as bad. Like some of the designs of FromSoft games, Monster Hunter, Dragon's Dogma. Just because a game's biting back and seems unfair, maybe that's the point sometimes.
maybe.
Yeah.
As for my topic I picked, this comes from Aramis Baramis, who asks, any moving tips specifically when it comes to a game collection? I'm in the midst of packing and I'm paranoid about damaging things. Thanks. So yeah, I've moved a few times. Find nice steady boxes, and you know, just sort of to not lose anything, just sort of pack all the simpler games together. I find most of the time it doesn't really have that much of an issue. The big thing I'd actually say is catalog them before. It'll take you longer, but make sure you note every single game you have.
Take inventory.
Yes, take inventory yeah. and know what's there. So if you're missing something, you're like, okay, where is it? And maybe mark the boxes with what's in that one. So here's all your Super Nintendo games. Here's all your Switch games, that sort of thing. So yeah, that's sort of my big tip is keep them similar, but inventory is key.
Mm-hmm.
Any other tips from you guys?
I've moved a couple of times at this point with having to carry a lot of my stuff around. Just have them packed tightly. Make sure to do as much as you can without making sure that they don't jumble around, because a lot of stuff can get damaged that way. Pack as tightly as you can. If you fill up the empty space with, you know, your typical bubble wrap or something. I've used my my foam, my studio foam around here. You can buy a pretty decent amount for a relatively cheap cost, and they actually padded a lot of my stuff that was left over. Because they're able to just kind of protect things that way. Some of the more fragile stuff, like certain like collector's editions or my controllers and the consoles themselves, pack those as safely as you can, because you never know what could happen in the move. I remember a friend of mine was moving stuff like that, and they had some pretty valuable things in there. Like, I don't know, I forgot what it was, like some kind of statue you get with a collector's edition, and somebody dropped the box, and unfortunately there was a bit of a chip on it that you just couldn't easily fix, and they did, because they didn't properly like completely wrap it out. They had it in a way where it just wouldn't move, but it wasn't properly protected. And so I've learned from that to like make sure that if there's anything sensitive in there, pack tightly, make sure that you have any protection you can for especially your most valuable stuff in there. Games and boxes will mostly be okay, but you just got to be careful with that sort of thing.
Collectibles, you got to keep it a better eye on more than anything else. What about you, Brandon? Any tips?
I've moved once. So
make something up.
I really don't have anything to say. I've blocked out most of that memory. I moved into this house 7 years ago this year.
Oh man.
Well, and outside of that, it was living with my parents, and they moved once when I was like 6, so you know, I wasn't really involved in that process. Mm-mm. So I'll just kind of say to keep inventory, even if I haven't done it myself. Like, that came to mind because if you have a lot of games and a big collection, it can be easy to forget what you have. You'll see people on Twitter who are game collectors accidentally buy a game they already own. Mm. Like, it happens. So just keep a catalog.
Yeah, it makes sense. One little anecdote I'll say, I might have said it before, but it always comes to mind. So going back and forth to college, I was coming back from either spring or summer break or whatever, and was unloading the car, and I had my TV in there that I'd been using, and my mom was helping get stuff, and she was grabbing something that was next to the TV and pulling it out. Well, that's also where her ring finger was. And it goes up against the TV screen. And we found out that day that her ring was a real diamond because it scratched just a nice deep scratch right into the TV because it's, you know, CRTs. And it was like, well, fortunately, my grandmother was like, I'll get you a new TV. So.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah. So yeah. I got like a kind of an upgraded TV thanks to that. It was a actual like smaller flat screen. So, well, flat screen at the
we
time.
We call that
still thick.
We call that a happy accident.
Yeah.
Where the outcome is actually pretty good.
Yeah. I mean, we were mostly, I was like, that sucks, but it was also mostly laughing at the fact that, well, we know your diamond's real. So there you go.
What a way to find out.
I know.
Yeah.
Oh, goodness. But I think with that, that is all of our questions from our patrons this week, and that is going to be a wrap for GBG Cast episode 99. Thank you all so much for being here and continuing to support the show. Really is appreciated. Thank you for bearing with us in this move over to Twitch. And let's go ahead and bring up our credits as we're joined by the wonderful John picture here for this. I felt it was only natural. And, of course, give a big shout out to all of our producers. Without you, this show would just not be possible. Thank you so much. It really does mean all the world, and couldn't do it with all of you, whether you watch or you know, support the Patreon, excuse me, and all of that stuff. So, yeah, just always, always appreciate it. But, of course, we got to give an extra special thank you to our executive producers, which includes Brandon Bovia, Cutie Caitlin, Fangs, Z Patty, Sky Blue Flames, Eastman 23, Adam O'Sullivan, Richard Herrera, Logan Daniel, The D-Pad, Blake, Joy Content, Angel Martinez, Vedron, Joshua Hunter, Benny Yao, Azran 127, Black King, Joseph Rutkin, Geeky Griffin, Lucky Wonderfish, Wataniac, Top Dog 23100, Young Ben Kenobi, Andrew Medeiros, Darchi, Ikaro, Essex08, Michael McCall, Matthew Wong, Goran Amber CPHT, just noticed you, Daniel. Too Much Spaghetti, Bane 400, Ascaron 809, Rioner, Benji Bear Pup, The Game Orb, Super Gamer Dude 101, Ravelox, Rosa Pardo Bowling, hi Steve's mom, Darksteel 01, Jason Uloa, Jaden Buck, Cystic Warrior 29, Super Dank Awesome Unicorn Guy, Derek, Colin, Blaystar 25, Twilord, Mumbling Yeti, Cameron Sharp, Keel, Hustlebun, Noah Fitterer, Calvin Atkinson, Brainchild, the entire state of Wisconsin, Jim Wakelin, Zlaker, Andy Mime P, Aramis Baramis, Kyle the Monarch, Lord Metarex, Blaze Collard, Eric, Cat EV Person 5, Peyton Thiel, Mega Beatman True Blue Reviews, Ryan Hanley, Somnia, The Game Jamie, Zombie Joe, and Marathon Max. Thank you all so much for joining us for this episode. I hope you all had a wonderful week. Hope your upcoming week also goes well. And I forgot to turn off the intro, so apologies for that as we go back to the main screen. There's always something.
To episode 99.
99 episodes and we're still making that mistake. Hell yeah. Anyway, everyone, thank you so much for watching. We will catch you next time for the GVG Cast episode 100. And if you want to support the channel, you can join that live audience right over there on the screen at patreon.com/GVGaming. Thank you all so much. And until then, bye.
See ya.